Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com. It is the 24th of June, 2013, in the land of the rising sun, and today we're joined on the line once again from Oregon by our old friend and our good friend and the host and webmaster of BoilingFrogsPost.com, who she'll need no introduction to my regular listeners. Of course, none other than Sibel Edmonds. Sibel, great to have you on the program again today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be back again.
Absolutely. Well, today, let's start by talking about the incredible revelations that were broken first on BoilingFrogsPost.com last Wednesday in your interview between yourself and Peter B. Collins and NSA whistleblower Russell Tice, of course, one of the members of the National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, who has been speaking out for years about the abuses of the NSA in their illegal and warrantless wiretapping program. Of course, he was also one of the sources that was used by Eric Lichtblau and James Risen in their 2005 reporting on the warrantless wiretapping case. And he has been talking for years and years now about some of the implications of this. But last Wednesday on BoilingFrogsPost.com, he went further than ever in not only revealing that, yes, and confirming that the NSA is scooping up all of the electronic communications flowing through the United States wholesale, both the metadata and the content, but also, perhaps even more startlingly, revealing the names of some of the people who had been wiretapped specifically by the NSA, including not only the top Republican and Democratic officials, ranking House and Senate members, people on the Judiciary Committee and other very important committees, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, top-ranking military generals, including David Petraeus, and even a young Illinois senator who went on to become President Barack Obama. Some startling claims that were followed up one day later with an interview on CorbettReport.com. So let's direct people again to listen to those interviews if they haven't yet done so. But I'd like to start today by getting your take on the significance of these interviews and the information that Russell Tice has revealed.
Sure. Let me begin by talking about a little bit about Russ Tice, the NSA whistleblower we're talking about here, and provide some responses here to some of the vicious attacks that we have been receiving from the mainstream media people, and that includes with the recent attacks from the editor of Vanity Fair. They are twisting this. They have been putting this misinformation, and this they have been doing it among themselves, but they also have been putting this within the social network, social media. And that is, oh, here we have suddenly this new whistleblower, Russ Tice, coming with new revelations about the NSA. Where the hell was this guy before? Why is he popping up now? Why is he coming up with all these brand new allegations? And I want to talk about it a little bit because I've known Russ Tice as the founder and director of National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, organization that was and is for whistleblowers and is basically organized by whistleblowers, and these are government whistleblowers. So Russ Tice came to us in mid-2004. And he contacted me. I had several meetings with Russ Tice in person. At the time, he was just going through his, last stage with the NSA. He was about to be terminated. This was during the time that the NSA, as part of the retaliation against his whistleblowing, they were sending him to some psychiatric evaluations to their particular psychiatrist, who actually works within the NSA. And what he did at the time, and this was before the revelations by the New York Times, this was before there ever was any whistleblower from the NSA. As far as I know, Russ Tice, at least since, 1990s, is the first whistleblower coming out of the NSA with his name, not as anonymous source, but with his name. And he contacted me and he told me what he was trying to do was this. He had information, classified information, not justifiably maybe classified, but classified high-level information on illegal eavesdropping by the NSA, with collaboration with many companies and including phone companies, but he wanted to abide by the rules, and these are the rules of the government, and he wanted to go through the so-called channels These are the so-called channels. They say it's available. They are available to whistleblowers. You go to the IG office. You go to the Senate Judiciary or Intelligence Committee. So this was during the time when I was green, when I was naive. This was when I was advocating for government whistleblowers to exhaust the so-called proper channels. Go to IG, go to courts, go to Congress. And if all fails, that's when you come out and leak. This was me back then in 2004-2005. So after we checked him out through our, you know, other whistleblowers to find out who is this guy, meeting with him several times, in 2005, as an organization, we put out a press release because we tried first to get the Senate Intelligence Committee, House Intelligence Committee, to grant Rustice a meeting in a secured facility, SCIF, S-C-I-F, and for Rustice to give these people documents, tell them about the details of illegal eavesdropping by the NSA. He tried on his own. It didn't get anywhere. He wouldn't get a call back. And here he was, a veteran NSA employee, the only whistleblower, the first one coming forward. That was when we said, okay, you know what? We're going to do this publicly, and we are going to seek support from the U.S. media. So we prepared, this is NSWBC, a press release, and we put Russ Tice's background. At the time, he was even afraid to divulge his title, full title, that what program he was for. He was extremely cautious. And we said, this man possessed information on illegal eavesdropping by the NSA and other, and we emphasize, illegal operations that even goes beyond what recently New York Times divulged. It goes much deeper than that. This was 8 years ago, James. And this press release went to every single media outlet in our database, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, you name it, and including the alternative media sources. If, of course, it was published on our website. And our listeners and our viewers can view this. And this is in response to those people who are right now going out there and saying, Rustice is a new whistleblower. He never came forward. These are new allegations. And here he is popping up with Snowden stuff coming forward. That is wrong. That is false. We have documentation. We have all the witnesses. And so we tried very hard to get Rustice before. And Rustice at that point, he was not telling me what the details were. And now fast forward to the last couple of weeks with what we found out through revelations that came through Snowden. Rustice contacted me again and he said, listen, with all the things that I am ready to divulge more. And I'm really impressed by this man. And I think he's right with what he's doing because I tried the so-called proper channels, just like myself. You know, he has a change of position. Now it says, okay, the public has the right to know. It doesn't go anywhere if you go to Congress, you go to courts, you go to the Inspector General's office. And he said, I tried to recontact because he was one of the sources for the New York Times. New York Times and the other publications like Washington Post, MSNBC, CNN, and most of them didn't want to even hear about it, about other revelations that I am now prepared to make. And several others, they actually booked me, scheduled me in light of all the publicity we are getting on Snowden. And then last minute, I would be inside a town car on my way to the studio for the recording session, and they would call and cancel. They would say, we are sorry, we're not going to do it. We talked with our attorneys and our legal advisors. They are advising us against this. Now, another piece of misinformation that is being floated by the U.S. mainstream media on this is this. Of course, we could not air this because we haven't had time to vet him in terms of what kind of a whistleblower Rustice is. Is he legit? Is he crazy? And we haven't vet the information. We have to go and confirm Rustice's allegations through other sources from the NSA. Well, we know they are not going to be able to go to NSA's press office and get confirmation. Otherwise, Snowden would have done it. And hundreds of other government whistleblowers would have done it. But again, this is absolutely a lie. It's a propaganda. It's misinformation because all they have to do, the mainstream media, whether it is this MSNBC or CNN or New York Times, they could say, here, this is the whistleblower who's been around for 8 years, okay? And this is his track records. By the way, do you know how many medals Russ Geis has from the Air Force? He has several awards from the NSA. This guy has received medals from the Air Force, okay? So you're looking at a solid person who just, you know, is now entering a PhD program, okay? He's not some bum out there who's coming and saying, blah, blah, I have some information on the NSA. So they would publish his allegations and they could then contact the press office of the NSA and say, by the way, here is the information we are receiving and we want to get your side. What are you saying? NSA may say no comments. They may say, hey, this guy is a wacko and is completely lying. We would never do such a thing. They would have an opportunity to respond. This is how it is supposed to work with journalism, with the TV outlets, with these networks. You put both sides and you let the public decide. You say, this is what this whistleblower is saying. This is what the government is saying. You make up your mind. Well, instead of doing that, they're saying they're not going to seek comments from the NSA. They're saying their attorney says, no, this is too dangerous. We are not going to air it. So I said, Russ, we would be more than happy. In fact, we would want to, we love to publish all this unedited. Just you get to talk. You tell us as much as you're prepared to tell us. And we'll just provide this to the public, okay, within our reach. And the same thing with our partner website, Corbett Report, with Peter B. Collins. And you know what? With today's support that we are receiving through the social networks, etc., we will at least garner some public knowledge and support for you through this. And that's exactly what we did. And it was a bit shocking even for myself during the interview because we didn't even get to some of those details prior to the interviews. He and I had discussions about the government because I know it from the FBI side of illegal targeting of the elected officials and even some executive branch officials, but we never got into the names. So as far as the names were concerned during the show, this was the first time Russ Geis divulged it during the interview. So I was as appalled as everyone, and I was actually surprised that he felt this brave to finally put this information out publicly because we have been, you know, pressuring Russ and saying, you know, it doesn't happen. Don't look to the government. So that's how it came about. And of course, thanks to Corbett Report, your report, and we have been putting it out further and we are following up. Our interview was published and surprisingly, it was picked up by publications outlets such as Huffington Post and some of our other true independent media outlets like Washington's Blog. And it just exploded out there. Less than 24 hours later, the same evil people from MSNBC called Russ Geis and said, oh, well, we were just going to reschedule you. Now we want you to come on our show. We want to give you the platform. And please, you tell the public about all the stuff you recently divulged through Boiling Frogs Post. I'm sure they didn't say Boiling Frogs Post. They said that alternative, those little guys. Anyhow, so they sent a town car again, and they got him into the studio. He went there. He sat. They put the earplug, you know, they pass it through your shirt. You sit there. They made the lighting, and they're like, okay, everything is set. And as he's getting ready to start, they said, Mr. Geis, and that came through his, you know, headset, his earphone. And he said, yes. And he said, we do not want you to talk about or refer to your recent revelations at that little guy's alternative outlet. And we just talk about general NSA's illegalities in your view, you know, and Snowden and what's happening. And we do not want to get into any of these new revelations. And he said, well, this is why I came. This was the purpose of it. They said, look, we received calls from our attorneys in New York office, even though MSNBC, they have attorneys both in Washington, D.C. and New York City. So I don't know why it's New York City office. But they told us, advise us against it. So we are not going to air any of those allegations. We don't want a single word. Now, I don't know. It's hard to react when you're there. I would have let the camera roll. And while on air, I would say, you know, I was here to provide the Americans with this information and they censured me, and I would just rip it off that plug and I would walk out. But it's hard to react sometimes in the heat of the moment. And I guess Russ Tice tried to make the best out of whatever few minutes he was given and telling people that he wants to tell them more. And of course, anybody who would put it side by side, the recent interviews Russ Tice provided this veteran NSA employee to you and to Boiling Frogs Post, put it together next to MSNBC's censored piece. And this is another excellent example illustrating who these people are, whether it's the CNN or MSNBC and New York Times, who they really work for, which is the United States government and the corporations. And they should find out why there it is that more and more government whistleblowers, whether people like Snowden or Russell Tice, now the information is coming out either through foreign press. It came out of UK, Guardian, with Snowden case, because Washington Post had this information. They had their attorneys call them and say, do not publish it. But guess what? They published once it was embarrassing. It came out through Guardian, or through the little guys like us, James.
That's exactly right. And this is pretty established by this point. So it is amazing that we have this alternative, that we're able to bring this out to the people directly through these types of incredible revelations. So let's talk about the content of the revelations themselves. Was it any surprise to you, given your own personal history and what you know about the FBI and other organizations generally, that there is targeted eavesdropping and wiretapping going on these high officials?
I was surprised that the NSA did the same thing, because I was firsthand experience aware of what FBI was doing, meaning going through the back channels and collecting all sorts of information illegally and then maintaining that information illegally pertaining to elected officials. And this was on, for example, back then, the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. In my division alone, because I only have information on my division, we had close to a dozen of elected officials in Congress, okay, both Republicans and Democrats. But through the agents I worked for, I also found out that all the other divisions, they were collecting it again through the back channels on other elected officials, whether it was a desk for China within the FBI or Saudi Arabia. So, and I knew how they were collecting it and how they were storing it and how they were actually breaking the law by doing that. And I had no idea that the NSA was doing it separately in a wider, with a wider scope and sucking it up like this vacuum, all this information. So I was surprised. A lot of people may think, oh, maybe NSA does that, or I can't talk about what has been happening since 2002. I've been out of the FBI. But it was not the case that the NSA went and sucked in this information, then shared it with the FBI. FBI, they had their own methods, their own separate fiefdom that they used to go and gather this information, analyze it, store it. And again, I don't want people to think that street level agents who gathered this information were at fault. This came from the highest level of the FBI. And the agents didn't even know how this information, you know, was being used. But they did speculate, and I agree with their assessment and speculation, and that was that the heads of the FBI, you know, the head of the FBI, they used that both to protect the FBI, you know, because all sorts of things happened. Theoretically, Congress has the authority to investigate the FBI, to fire the head of the FBI or the head of the Justice Department, to impeach the president, to cut back on their budgets. I mean, theoretically, they haven't used this. When was the last time the United States Congress went after the FBI? Really, in rhetoric, yeah, you know, talking big on the media, but in action, you know, forget all the hearings and everything, what have they ever done in terms of accountability? So, A, to protect their own turf, B, to protect whoever is the president, regardless of the party. The files I was working on, and the reason those files for my state secrets privilege pertain to the time period 1996 till 2002, you're looking at two administrations there. You know, it was Bush administration and before that, Clinton administration. So it didn't matter who was in White House, considering the fact that whether Democrat or a Republican, the people placed in the White House, you know, the people promoted as viable candidates are selected, hand-selected by the establishment. You know, they select two, Republican, Democrat, okay, as two, they're viable. Both of them there, they say you can take this one or they can take this one. No matter who you pick, it's going to be our guy. We're going to win, okay? That is the reality of the U.S. Elections and the presidency today. And same thing is true with the lower level congressional House and Senate representatives. But that was used with, you know, by the FBI, the executive branch, and the White House, regardless of who was the president. Now, with these files, it's interesting. The information gathered on the elected officials in Congress, you know, Republicans and Democrats, they were gathered illegally under FISA. So what happens is FISA is very broad, and it's, I will get to FISA and the fact that it's rubber stamp and the whole illusion of FISA acting as a preventive or as an oversight mechanism is nonsense. It's never been that. It has been meant to be an illusion of some sort of oversight. And we know how it came about, FISA. But aside from that, so you get foreign lobbies and targets, okay? It's not only embassies, but also various lobby groups. Let's say AIPAC. Let's say JINSA. Yeah, let's say Turkish, American Turkish Council. So you have all these foreign lobbyists, okay? And even though there is such a thing as FARA, Foreign Agents Registration Act, by intention, I mean, this is completely by design. They have made this FARA Act, this Foreign Agents Registration Act, such that is filled with loopholes. So that any particular executive branch person, or especially the elected officials in Congress, can go around it, okay? You still can get lots of money from China or from Saudi Arabia or from Israel or from Turkey. Tons of money. And not really violated, you know? And of course, the FBI should actually decide and the Justice Department to come after you, because a lot of violations, despite these holes within FARA, is taking place on a daily basis, okay? So they would target these foreign lobbies, JINSA, AIPAC, American Turkish Council. No, well, when you're targeting these people, it's not the people from AIPAC talking with each other or some other, you know, Israeli people. They are also lobbying. Who are they lobbying, right? They are calling Congressman XYZ and saying, you know, they would really appreciate to have a side meeting, and they're going to... So, and then the meetings get to be set up. FBI surveillance team, in addition to wiretapping those foreign individuals and gathering information on the U.S. officials, they also get to go with their vans. Back then it was vans. I don't know if today they need that. They can just sit down and do it with their drones. But they follow the representatives and the agents under, you know, the targets, and, you know, eavesdrop to the meetings they have in a restaurant, in this steak restaurant, a steakhouse in Washington, D.C., and put everything. At 8:30 p.m., Congressman Hastert met with these two individuals, et cetera, et cetera, and have all this information. Now, in this case, under FISA, the targets, the primary targets where they receive this FISA allowance from the court, FISA court order, the judge says, yes, you can target and wiretap this JINSA official, this AIPAC official, this Turkish lobby groups, etc. That's what counterintelligence is. You want to find out about espionage, you want to find out about how people through lobbying, etc., getting... That's the purpose of the FBI counterintelligence. But as you are, the FBI, gathering information, you're automatically, by default, you're gathering information on the elected officials and on executive branch people who are selling information, who are being influenced. Okay, now the FISA law says, inadvertently, meaning by targeting this foreign person, if you get to have U.S. person's information, even though they are engaged in illegalities or criminal conduct, you, FBI, cannot use this against this person because you got the warrant for the foreign person. So that would be obtaining this U.S. person's stuff and keeping it illegally. So even if inadvertently you get that information from the foreign target that I let you spy on, immediately you have to shred that. The paper, if it's the audio tape, you got to take and black out that person's name. That's the way to stay safe, because you either criminally prosecute those people, you have to go and get another warrant from a different court to go after those hasters, etc., or you have to shred it. You have to get rid of it. FBI never got rid of that information. And that was by order from the FBI's director's office, no matter who was the director, because part of it happened during Mueller. That was, in fact, within the FBI, because you listen to these are audio tapes, you translate some of those, some of them are in English, you don't translate, but you also have a printout of all these. It still is old-fashioned. So you have digital records of these. You also have printed. You do a lot of, government still relies a lot on paperwork, believe me or not, okay? Even a lot of digital satellite stuff has to be printed on the paper. And they have this huge archives. So if you go to the FBI's archive, let's say under counterintelligence or within the headquarters office, director's office, you will see big section of all the elected, appointed U.S. officials, whether it's Dennis Hastert or versus Jan Schakowsky. And so the digital records stay, also big paperwork. And for this particular one, with my firsthand experience, the files pertain 1996 till 2002, very thick files just on that investigation alone. Now, the FBI agents I worked for, these are the street-level agents, they knew that this was illegal. And so they always talk about that. What is happening? What are they doing with this information? Okay. Well, the agent's belief was that this was for, since J. Edgar Hoover's days, this information was being used for exactly the same purposes and the same operations and the conducts that J. Edgar Hoover was engaged in for all those years within the FBI. Meaning, you use all this information when the time comes to protect the FBI, to protect the Justice Department, and to protect whoever is the president, because FBI serves the president's office. The president's office serves the establishment. So basically, you are protecting the establishment by using this information as blackmail method on these elected officials. Now, if you look at that, and you look at the track records of the United States Congress and say, we haven't had anybody really impeached within the FBI, removed from the office, or any of their big budgets. The budget has been increasing no matter how much they F up. The budget goes up. In fact, there is this negative correlation, you know, or actually positive correlation. The more you screw up, engage in illegalities, waste, fraud, abuse, the higher goes your budget. And this is not a hearsay. This is not a speculation. You take a look at the FBI's track record. You take a look at FBI's budget and the budget approval process within the United States Congress, and that confirms it. Now, a lot of people will scratch their heads and say, well, why the Congress is not doing that? Well, wouldn't this very informed speculation by the FBI agents and now even by myself make sense? How could they do it? Because if you get this person from the Senate Judiciary Committee, okay, and that person, Congressman, Senator Leahy, for example, Democrat, he had several dinners in his house, and two of those dinners actually were in his house with some foreign individuals, and some of those foreign individuals were actually later became most wanted by the FBI after 9/11, okay? And the same thing is true with the various ways these foreign lobby groups funnel money into these people. So let's say the Senator Leahy on Sybil Edmonds' case calls the FBI's deputy director and says, come over here. We want to talk to you. We want to demand explanation on this thing that this whistleblower disclosed with documents. That person comes in there, listens to Senator Leahy, and Senator Leahy says, we are going to have hearing, you be damn sure you're going to turn this FBI, and this is what Senator Grassley said, upside down. Okay. He can just smile and nod and then say, Oh, yes, Senator, while you're at it, you know, we wanted to have another session with you and ask you a few questions about this dinner you had with this representative. There seems to be a recording of it because those people were targets. And now that we have investigations of those people, now the director is thinking of opening, widening the investigations, and we need to have a questioning session with you. I mean, this is when that man is going to wet his pants, okay? And so we will call your office to arrange for that meeting, for that questioning meeting. And we want you to come to our office, FBI's headquarters, and leaves that office of Senator Leahy. Do you think Senator Leahy is going to follow up with what happened with the whistleblower Snowden or Sabelle Edmonds or Russ Dice or anything? He's going to say, holy, that's the thing he's going to say. Then he knows that they know. Okay, he knows the information is there. Would you ever expect any actions, any accountability hearing, any actions on those hearings, the so-called hearing from Senator XYZ, who knows that FBI knows what he's been doing? You know, like the Christmas song, you know, he knows where you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. That's exactly that. They do know. Now, is it illegal? Yes. Is it theoretically illegal under FISA? Yes and no. How it was obtained was kind of legal, but what they can do with that FISA order is really what they're doing is illegal. Now, as part of that within the FBI, even with all this ability, authority to collect all this blackmail dirt on U.S. government officials, representatives, despite that, FBI still would submit to the FISA court because the language specialists, we are involved because the agent has to prepare all this darn paperwork and every week go to the FISA court, sometimes renew some of these warrants because the warrants come 3 months or 6 months. Some of them are very temporarily for 2 weeks. And so they have to take it to the judge, either renew it or get new warrants, right? And they have to submit lots of paperwork. Well, I tell you what, James, two-thirds of what they submit, they put before these FISA judges are redacted. Even though FISA judges have clearance, their clearance supposedly is not high enough for them to see the details. Well, those details are necessary for any impartial judge to issue a ruling order saying, I'm not going to grant you this request. I'm not going to give you a warrant on this because this is bull. Well, they can't because, first of all, how can they? 90% or 75% of it is redacted. They were selected to be FISA court judges because they were crooked in one way or another. You don't get to be a FISA court judge appointed as such unless there's something really wrong with you as a judge. Okay, that's from the public's perspective and from the executive branches, from the president's perspective, from the establishment's perspective, unless something is seriously right with you. Okay, that's how you get to be appointed. And of course, the Congress, you know, they're going to move you through the system and you're there in those positions. So even if you were a good judge, impartial judge, you don't have enough information because it's redacted. And if you look at, again, the track record for the FISA court, see how many requests have they rejected. Let's say if they have had 1 million requests, at least, they have rejected maybe one, maybe none. They have now, it's a rubber stamp court, and their track records prove. I mean, we have had reports issued on this, the fact that they approve every request that FBI, Justice Department, these people, they give to them. So that's for that. And despite the fact that FBI could give it to them in redacted version, despite the fact that these judges were really right for the establishment and wrong for the people, in addition to these, there's supposed to be this rotating lottery kind of a system, random system that courts every week determines each judge's schedule. So people can't engage in what is referred to as judge shopping. Even despite that, even though despite these crooked judges, still for some of the more explosive or questionable requests, FBI had access to the court's rotary system, the court's the random judge selection system. So they would know, for example, that on Thursdays, and this was during the time when I was there, if you file it before 12 p.m., between 9 and 12 p.m. on Thursday, you're going to get this crooked judge, which is a better crooked judge than the other crooked judge. So they engage in that. So in light of all these, I know I always go on and on and on because I'm trying to provide context and explanation, and it's hard to do in really, or I don't have that ability. So what it comes down to, I was not surprised that government does it. I was surprised that NSA is doing this parallel to that. And that raises a very important, another very important question, and it is, how much of it is the president, whoever it is in the office, the puppets, but you also have several branches that have become a kingdom within itself. I mean, you're looking at these scary, fascistic, egocentric General Alexander the Great. And this is his turf. And they do it for their purposes to protect the NSA and their budget, their operations. And he's the king. And then you have Mueller, who ended up being there for 12 years or so, okay? And more than 12 years, over almost 12 years. And he has his kingdom. And that extends to the deputy kings, you know, bishops and all. And that's the kingdom. And they can use it however you want, as J. Edgar Hoover did, okay? Now, today, they are making all these movies. And what, even within those Hollywood movies and the op-eds written in the mainstream media, in the end, the conclusion is those dark days are all behind us, people. You can sleep soundly and safe. We don't have J. Edgar Hoover anymore. Well, J. Edgar Hoover's days never ended. It always continued. The only difference is people don't know about it. That's the only difference. So you have CIA kingdom. You have these generals. You have these fascistic generals, NSA kingdom. You have the Department of Homeland Security. Department of Homeland Security with its drones, with its no-fly list. And they have said they want to have abilities similar to the NSA because they said of all the agencies, Department of Homeland Security deserves that authority, that power, much more so than even NSA and CIA and the FBI. So you're dealing with emperors. You're dealing with these kings under the emperors. And of course, you're dealing with these crooked representatives in Congress running around being blackmailed, afraid to death to do anything. Okay. And as a side note, there was another report released. This was by big organizations, NGO. And if you look at what it took to be elected as a congressman, it went from 50,000 just in the past 15 years to now over $1 million you have to spend for elections to be a viable congressional candidate. That amount went for the senators from something like $350,000, $400,000 to now over $5 million, okay? So these are the kinds of people who get elected. Those people who have that kind of money, they are given that kind of money, are they going to represent the 99% or the 1%? And the same thing is true. Another report was released 5 days ago. We had it during our nightly news, and it said of the 12 Supreme Court judges, all 12 are high-level multimillionaires, okay? Now, I didn't see any details how they got these multi-millions of dollars, 10 million here, 12 million for, but 12 out of 12. Now, those Supreme Court judges, are they the representatives of the 1% or the 99%? And so when you start looking at the wealth of people in Congress, in House and in the Senate, when you're looking at these crooked judges, what you see is you see all part of the same kingdom. It is the same extension of the empire. This is not the representative government, the democracy, or whatever it is. 4th of July is approaching, and this is what hopefully people will be thinking about while they are savoring their hot dogs.
One can only hope. Well, just on that last note, of course, we should also mention and reflect on the fact that that Russ Tice mentioned that every single one of the Supreme Court justices has been targeted by this NSA wiretapping as well. So they also have had their communications spied upon, almost certainly for the purposes of leverage and blackmail, exactly as you paint. And you paint a very detailed and rich picture with a lot of context that really, I think, helps to make this clear for people. And the image that I get from this is almost like maybe a chessboard, where the theory is, of course, that the three branches of government are supposed to keep each other in check and balance so that none could become overarching. But in reality, I think what's happened is there's a fourth branch of government. The national security state has emerged that has checkmate powers over all three because they have the information that can scuttle any of these politicians or even the judges' careers at the drop of a hat. And with that kind of power, obviously, they have assured themselves to be, as you say, emperors, kings. Ruling over their little fiefdoms that continue to expand and expand as their ability to eavesdrop and collect this information expands. It is a nightmarish system. So I guess the obvious question is, well, can you provide any examples of this, how this works, and perhaps some of the people who might have been compromised in this manner?
Absolutely. One good example on this very topic would be the spying on judges or collecting dirt on judges, as FBI agents put it. And it's not only the Supreme Court judges, but almost all federal court judges. Now, I had in 2004, I met with this another FBI agent who came to me and who came to our organization, National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. And this was during the, you know, my case, middle of my court case against the FBI and the Justice Department and the state secrets privilege. And so he had some information that had to do with collecting, and his information was separate than mine. You know, his division included even more stuff, not just counterintelligence, on some of the congressional, you know, people and gathering dirt on them. But as part of that, he paused and he said, you know, I understand you're going to the federal court seeking justice, but if I were you, I really wouldn't keep my hopes up, including the fact, you know, considering the fact that how much money you spent on the attorneys. And he said, let me tell you something, Sibel. In mid-1990s, when I first, he used to be part of the military. Then he came to the FBI and started with the FBI. And during the first few years, he said, when I was a rookie agent, my job was, for the first couple of years, was conducting background check on appointed or candidates, possible candidates to be appointed as federal court judges, you know, by the president. And that was my job. So I would go and do background check before president would appoint this person to bench, you know, to see if this guy has any dirt, you know, financial irregularities, affairs, you know, all sorts of mob connections, etc. So he said, as a good agent that I was, I would go and do my work. So I would, like a detective with my partner agent, we would, you know, get all the records, whether it's from DMV, phone records. That was like what people, who were the people, not the content maybe, but who were the people this guy has been calling in the past 4 or 5 years, landline, it's, you know, included, and financial, tax, talk to some neighbors, talk to ex-wives, if they had any ex-wives, those kinds of things, because they need to have background check before, you know, the president or someone to say, here, I'm appointing this person to this bench. So he said, we would bring this to the FBI, okay? And what we saw was, you know, it depends on how you look at it, negative correlation or positive correlation. The judges that were what we called squeaky clean, the judge candidates, who were squeaky cleans, they were discarded immediately. And the ones, the judges, the federal court judge candidates that had the highest number of irregularities, you know, whether sexual orientation or, you know, sexual background, sexual life, or it's their whoever they are calling, or how, if they cheated on their tax, did they hire a babysitter who did, who was not U.S. citizens, or it was illegal immigrants, etc., etc. Those were the ones that were selected as the most viable candidates. Now, this person never became like a known whistleblower. He had no reason to come and throw this. I listened to this because what I did for the FBI didn't involve that kind of information. So I wouldn't know anything about these judge selection candidate operations and what the FBI did. So immediately I went to my attorneys at the time who were, these were the, this was the private law firm who was representing me in my case against the Justice Department and all the gag orders. And I said, you know what, I found out. And in fact, this person is willing to talk to you. I mean, you would never divulge his name, but the judges, this is how they're getting their backgrounds. This is something, you got to do something, because look what's happening with my judge case, which I will get into in a second. My attorneys, they said, shh, you don't want to piss off judges. Right now, you're in the middle of your case, Sabal. The last thing you want is go and piss off judges. Don't even talk about it. Well, wait until your case is over, whatever. You can pursue it later. I can't let things go. So in about a year and a half later, when I was being represented by the ACLU, and they were having all the sessions with me, getting information, preparing for the case, I told the ACLU, I said, you know what? I have this FBI agent, decorated veteran, and he would be willing to talk to you, you know, off the record about the judge candidates and how they do the real dirty ones are the most viable ones. So they say, President, appointees, they are perfect. They would never challenge you, Mr. President. They would never challenge us, FBI, because they are scumbags, right? The ACLU, these are nice people. They are my friends. They said, you know, whenever they start with something like, well, I get so scared because it's always something awful. So, well, then a little bit more pondering. And then they said, we are in the business of going to judges, not going after them. Okay, so this is not something that the ACLU can look into and deal with. And right now, if you're going to go to the Supreme Court, just hush right now, let's not talk about it. So, okay, so you can't go to the ACLU, you can't go to these NGOs, you can't go to the law firms. I mean, what do you do? Who do you go? Who do you blow the whistle to when you see there is a corruption degree that determines who is viable judge? The more corrupt you are, the more viable candidate you are. And of course, we have, in my own case, when my attorneys in this FBI gag orders case, etc., they filed my case with the federal court. They draw, again, it's supposed to be this random, supposed random system, this federal court judge named Roberts. And he had a decent reputation. He had sided in the past with some liberal causes, with some cases of whistleblowers. He didn't appear to be very pro-government. You know, there are some judges that is so obvious. I mean, it is so obvious. You really don't have to look hard. It's like government is always right. This guy appeared to be better relatively speaking. And so we said, okay, at least we have a judge that seems to be a bit more decent than the others. Within 3 months after this man started, you know, presiding over my case, we got a notification, my attorneys, the law firm who was representing me, saying that the judge in my case was being removed from my case and they were appointing another judge, federal court judge, on my case. I said to my attorney, I said, why? I said, well, they don't have to cite any reason. I said, well, why not? I mean, they have to cite reasons. They said, Sabal, it's not how it works. That's not how it works. I said, who is this man? And then my attorneys, of course, look out, and they're looking at his bio, you know, and they said, oh, Judge Reggie Walton, he used to work at the White House drug czar's office. And the moment he said, my case involves all the stuff with heroin and NATO's involvement. I said, what? I said, no way, he can't resign. They said, you cannot do anything about it. And you know what? Whatever he did, that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad judge, Sabal. Just give him a chance. Let's see how it goes. I mean, deep inside, I knew, like, no way, Jose, this is not going to happen. So we had a hearing scheduled for November. 2-3 days before the hearing, Judge Walton would issue his court notification to my attorney saying, the hearing was being canceled and it was being postponed for March or April. No reason cited. They actually put it there. No reason cited. Then 1 or 2 days before that April date, he would send another notification to my attorneys. He said it is postponed until June or July. He engaged in 5 or 6 postponements and all of them, I never had any hearings with this judge. No reason cited. In fact, the last one, it was unlimited, postponed. I mean, this is the federal court judge, which was appointed by President Bush. And then I was contacted by some people, and I forgot whether it was the Judicial Watch or it was the reporter Bill Conroy, saying that because during the same period of time, he ended up being the same judge that was appointed to this Valerie Plame Wilson, Joe Wilson case. It's like, what a coincidence, you know? So anyhow, I was contacted and I was given these documents because all these judges should have the background checks, their financial disclosure, which is mandatory by law, posted for public viewing. Well, he was one of very few judges, federal court judges, whose entire financial record was redacted. I mean, there were some other federal court judges with some redaction. Judge Reggie Walton of Drug Czar's office, the same judge who was being mysteriously appointed to all these whistleblower cases, the one who kept postponing the case, well, his was everything. Not there was not a single line. And if you were to show this, and I know you're going to show it to our viewers, you see this redacted disclosure. There's nothing. There says Judge Reggie Walton. There's a signature. There's nothing else. So I took that paper and I didn't have any place to go. And the reporter, Bill Conroy, he wrote about it. And this organization, Judicial Watch, they actually brought some kind of lawsuit. They pressured, they gave the judge and the FBI and the president's office plenty of time to go and alter whatever they wanted to alter. And he put the modified version, unredacted, modified version, and this is it's modified out there. But that just shows you, you have a federal court judge that has been appointed. And he says, public has no right to know about my financial background. And in other words, he's saying, I have a lot of things to hide within my financial background from the public. It's not good for the public, okay? If they shouldn't know about this, it's bad. I would look awful. Therefore, I have the power to redact it. FBI is okay with it because FBI already knows about it. This is why today I'm a federal court judge. The White House who appointed me, they know about it. But you, the people, can't know about it. So this goes again to the heart of these things of classification and redaction and the general concept of the public's right to know. But it also relates to what is happening and the revelations by Russ Tice, the fact that NSA has been engaged in this. Okay, I know FBI has been engaged in this. We know J. Edgar Hoover was engaged in this. And we know that the presidents appoint judges and the federal court judges, they have tons of things in their background to be blackmailed because that's how they get to be selected as viable candidates. The more corrupt you are, the dirtier you are, the more skeletons you have in your closet, the higher the likelihood of you being appointed to the bench or as a viable presidential candidate, viable Senate candidate, or the House candidates, etc.
Well, again, you paint a very vivid picture, and the picture you paint is a depressing one, because we've been told that the cream rises to the top, but it seems like the scum rises to the top, and you have to skim that off the top, and it makes perfect sense, because knowledge is power, and knowledge of dirty deeds is leverage over these elected officials, judges, and, of course, people in the executive branch as well, so... It is an incredibly difficult problem to even begin to face because, of course, every avenue that we are presented with for dealing with this is itself compromised. So,
and that's extremely important, James, because they are putting all the surveys out. I'm talking to people and they are still majority out there saying why this guy Snowden leaked information. Why didn't he go through the appropriate channels? Why didn't he go through the proper channels? What we want to do is we want to raise the awareness and saying there are no proper channels. There are no appropriate channels. And even the last resort being leaking the information, I would say there are no legit, decent, trustworthy media channels. So this whole notion of this leaker should have gone through the proper channels is based on this illusion that they indeed, we have this proper channels, but we don't. And the same thing with Russ Tice. Snowden, all he had to do is look at my case, Sybelle Edmonds case, look at Russell Tice case, look at the Thomas Drake case. I mean, he has had hundreds of cases to review. And if he has shred of brain, which obviously he does, he says, I'm not going to do that. These suckers went through that. I have to learn from their mistakes. There are no proper channels. This is the only way to do it. And that is not an easy decision to make. And people need to understand this, because I really get offended as a whistleblower when people come and accuse whistleblowers as being traitors, as these people who have gone and done this for attention grabbing, when they don't know that is actually a hell of a price to pay. So I really take issue with those people. And in my recent dealings, even with mainstream media or the quasi-alternative media, I have engaged in this argument back and forth on, you know, the channeling dissent. I mean, there are people out there who are putting petition saying, "Dear King Obama, your highness, please pardon this man, okay? I am one of the whistleblowers who have suffered a lot. So I can't relate to Snowden. If someone would have done that to me, okay, if that would have been the public's response to go and put a petition on my behalf and say, King Obama, pardon this man, I would have regretted my decision. I would have been disgusted. I would have been offended. And I'm getting outraged here because it is disgusting. You are, by doing that, you are making this man to be a criminal. You are making the king who is engaged in criminal wrongdoing, the holy figure who should be pardoning this man like he's a Thanksgiving turkey. And you are going and being proud of collecting signatures. I can understand some people being ignorant and signing this kind of a belligerent, demeaning, humiliating, awful petition because they think, oh, well, that's something I can do. I can sign some petition. I have done my citizenry duty. But I take real offense with people, these organizations, these media outlets. You know, one of them was antiword.com coming out today and attacking me for telling people, don't do this. Don't legitimize the illegitimate system by going and seeking pardon for someone who has exposed crime, okay? There is only one party here who should be seeking pardon from the people, and that is the king and all the king's men who have engaged in illegalities and violating the Constitution, and they need to go down on their knees and seek pardon from the people. That is if we are the representative government. And there are people who should be given medals to raise this awareness and issue and expose the king and all the king's men criminality. So it's offensive. And I hope that our viewers, our listeners will go out there and tell these people that they are further legitimizing a criminal, illegitimate system.
Very forcefully argued, and I couldn't agree more. It's exactly right to give the power to the criminals to pardon the people exposing the criminals' criminality is ridiculous. And people who are playing into that system are playing into the system as a whole. Obviously, this leads to the question, what can the people out there do to do anything at all about this? Is this a system that is just too far gone to save?
Looking at the United States today, I can't help but really get outraged. I just finished reading this article on the protests in Turkey, and I gave an interview, and I was talking about even grandmothers, 75, 80 years old, they get out in the street to show their, you know, unity and to show their solidarity with the protests. And the article I read was talking about now the Turkish protesters and all the people have devised this very peaceful system of gathering in these beautiful parks. They get together, they talk about these issues, they debate it, and they seek solutions. They say, this is what, and then they walk together and act on it, you know, act upon it peacefully. Whether it's the standing man just standing there saying, shame on you, or walking and protesting it by other peaceful means, but starts with people actually getting off their computer, getting off their gadgets and saying, I've been a good citizen. Today I did 10 tweets. Sabelle Edmonds or Snowden, they are heroes. I agree with that. So I retweeted their tweets. All right, now I'm going to go to McDonald's or I'm going to go and watch my football. I'm done for the day. We need to go out there. We need to get together. We need to get together as people sit around tables, coffee houses, parks, and then move out of those places together by setting differences aside and saying, this is about us, the people. The only party with power to stop this ends up being only, you know, the people, the power of people. And that's what I'm asking people to do, to get out there, start setting up local meetups. You know, make it about some hamburgers, that's fine. Eat hot dogs, whatever it is you want to drink, your coffee, have some beer, get together, 15, 20, 200, 2,000. That's how it's going to start. I haven't seen any beginning of that. I haven't seen that kind of kindling. As long as activism is reduced to sitting and retweeting five times a day, as long as activism is reduced to signing some silly crime legitimizing petitions, okay, I put my signature in there, that's just, I'm done with my citizenry duty, then there is really nothing good that can ever come out. We cannot get better in any way. At least we can't even stop the awfulness that is happening to all of us. Instead of doing that, take the initiation, okay? Just say, I'm going to email 15 people, and I'm going to ask them each email one or two people. Let's start getting together. I'm here in Bend, Oregon, okay? I'm willing to organize one of these. I want to meet people. I go to coffee houses. I'm addicted to caffeine. Obviously, it shows on camera as well. But I am willing to take this initiation, and I'll do it, okay? And say that yourself. Say, I'm going to do it. Let's start having some meetups. Then let's go ahead and unite. Maybe I can unite the meetings with in Bend with some of the people in Eugene, Oregon, and Portland, you know, and Salem. And before you know, we are going to be a movement. There are no real movements currently. There are some really good, you know, alternative media outlets who are doing good jobs. Bravo to them. I'm really, really impressed with what they've been doing. There are some good hackers, technical people who are saying enough is enough, you know. This is within my ability. I'm going to use it, and I'm going to show them, say, this is what it does. And I'm going to point this to the enemies of the state, you know, this hacking ability. Those are great things. But people, regular citizens, let's meet. Let's get together. Let's walk. Let's stand. Let's have our coffee mugs and just stand and show. That's the start. And it's better than what we have been seeing so far. That's my message.
Excellent. Well, that was extremely well put. And I think you're exactly right. Unless people actually get off of their little gadgets and start doing something, nothing at all will be accomplished. Because if people are just waiting around for some congressman to come in and save the day, they are definitely putting their hope in the wrong place. All right. Well, this is just such an incredibly important interview. I hope people will help to spread the word about this interview and what we've talked about today, as well as the interviews with Russell Tice. I think we'll leave things there for now, but obviously we'll be returning to this and reporting on it a lot more in the coming days and weeks. So Sybil Edmonds, BoilingFrogsPost.com, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, James, as always.